KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
Love is not what you say, and it's not flowers on Valentine's Day. It's what you do in a thousand little ways every day, the little kindnesses.
It was like a couple years into it, and then she's like, how come you haven't told me that you love me yet? And then I like couldn't say it.
Thank God, Bill has caught Jill in a trap. And Arfe is claiming that Jill proposed to her, and he's threatening Jill with scandal.
You know what day it is? Valentine's Day. And so, once again, we're going to be asking you two questions. And I know you have answers to them both. Without them, there is no us, right? Without them, there's no this. So a little later, I would like you to share with us, if you would, some stories about what it was that you learned about yourself and what changed because you are a couple. And then, because it's Valentine's Day and there are hearts broken as well, when did you know it was over? It was over when? So we're going to get some stories from you in a little bit. You could start calling now if you'd like. To have your loved one know you're going to tell them how much you loved them for this reason, how it changed you, or even a little after that, about 10:30, you knew it was over when. You can email us weekday at kuow.org, or you can give us a call, 206-543-5869, 1-800-289-5869. Would like to hear your stories in a moment. But first, just a little bit about your Orca card. And what it turns out your Orca card is telling folks, because it is making some statements. Matt Fixever-Kirk is a writer for Crosscut, the online news magazine, crosscut.com, News of the Northwest. He's also a former special projects director for the mayor of Seattle and a CEO of firms in manufacturing, design, and media. Covers urban affairs, politics, international topics, and apparently also travel and travel issues. Hello, Matt. Good to talk to you again.
Hi, Steve. How are you doing?
Good. I understand you have a cold.
I do, so I thought I'd spare you the in-studio appearance this morning.
But thanks for rising up just to talk to us. I appreciate it.
Oh, that's no problem. We're busy celebrating Valentine's Day here.
Because you know what that person has changed in you, huh?
Mostly for the better, I think.
I would hope so. That's the stories we're going to get anyways. All right, our Orca card. It never forgets, huh?
Well, it turns out there's two things, really. One is that when we took a look at the Orca card, and we found out that the card itself keeps a little record of about 10 of your most recent trips. And surprising to us, anyways, was that the data on that card about those trips was not encrypted. And it turns out some guys have figured out how to crack that, and we could talk about that. The other issue is that the Orca system, which is this conglomerate of multiple transit agencies, and basically the Orca system covers about 80% of Washington State's entire transit usage. And this conglomerate's servers and Orca backend and back office has been gathering all this trip data about what cards have tapped on and tapped off where, and have just been keeping it since the system went live in 2009. Now, Sound Transit is the lead agency on Orca, and they say that, well, your Orca card just contains a number. It doesn't contain your identity. But if you purchase your Orca card online, of course, you may have ways to have that identity matched to the card, possibly. And also, if you use an age-based discount, then in encrypted form on the card is your birthday. So this was all really interesting. So we just started asking questions about it and talking to folks to learn what we could.
Smart Card, What Your Orca Never Forgets, is in crosscut.com. It was put online yesterday. All right, so what are the civil liberty concerns, if anything, that ACLU or groups of that nature have about the fact that, they know that you take the bus?
And I think that their concerns that they identified in the development of the Orca system were, first, in no particular order, they were, whenever you're gathering mass amounts of big data, you should try and go for maximum privacy benefit. And that means retaining transaction data for the shortest time possible. Limit access to that data just to the cardholders and people that need the data to use it. And when you're providing data for other purposes, just provide aggregate or anonymized data. And this sort of all prevents against repurposing of big data after the fact for other purposes. You know, the internet remembers everything, the cloud remembers everything. As governments and agencies gather up a whole bunch of information about people, do we necessarily want them just holding on to that forever and then finding future uses for it or not? So other concerns were if somebody's looking at your information and trying to figure out something about you, should you be notified that they're doing that? And these are standard sort of privacy and personal information concerns that were raised in the development of the system. Now, the ORCA development was a lengthy project and complex, and some of them were addressed and some of them weren't addressed to get the system to where it is now.
Do you think that there is a reason that Sound Transit or these other agencies in total should not keep this data?
Well, if you ask people in what you might call the privacy community, like the ACLU and others, everybody understands that big data like this is useful and valuable for doing certain things. But they also understand that there's not really any practical need, for example, for the card itself to have a memory over multiple trips other than the most recent trip you took, or for the database just to go on forever. Generally, they think a sounder practice is to limit the data to a certain amount of time. And in fact, what Sound Transit has told us is that later this year, they are actually going to start archiving the old data, but I don't know if that means deleting it, and then just keeping the most recent 25 months of it available. But the privacy community folks will all say this is a conversation that's useful to have openly and constantly, particularly as the technology changes, which is what happened in the case of Farebot, this cell phone app that actually now can read the ORCA cards and transit cards from other cities.
All right. Well, that is part two. Smart Card, What Your ORCA Never Forgets by Matt Fixey-Verkirk is in the crosscut.com website. The geeks who cracked the ORCA card. So you took a look at this Farebot. Why did these guys even think about doing this, and who are they?
Well, these guys are two guys from Seattle. One of them is in computer science at the UW. The other one was a graduate of Nathan Hale High School. And it was kind of a two-step process. When the ORCA beta cards came out, Carl Kosher examined them and sought to reverse engineer them to see if he could figure out how it was communicating. RFID, radio frequency identification. The card and the reader exchange, you know, the card is energized by the radio waves and starts transmitting back, and the two talk to each other super fast when you hold your card up to it. So he took some of the beta cards and spent some time trying to figure out. He got a software kit, a third-party software kit, and tried to figure out how it worked. Was able to do it relatively easily. At the time, there were no cell phones that could do this, but a couple of years down the road, that became possible with some of the new cell phones that have this near-field communication RFID capability. And so at that time, Eric Butler, who is a self-taught application developer and programmer, decided to put an app together. And practical uses for it were pretty clear. You want to have a drawer full of ORCA cards. You want to figure out which one, or you're traveling between cities with different cards. You want to figure out which one has money on it. But then it was interesting to note that it also showed you where it had been.
So one thing these guys did say, and the things they'd figured out, and they created this Farebot app, they haven't hacked the card itself to manufacture false fares, which I imagine the systems would not be too happy about if that was done.
And that turns out to be a more difficult proposal because, of course, all the readers that read the cards in the system are talking to the central computer on a regular basis. So they're comparing notes about which cards have, I assume, which cards have what balances and so forth. And if something is amiss, I'm sure an errant card or a card that had too much of a balance pop up on it would just be locked out of the system. So as one of these guys put it to me, he said he could think of some ways to do that, but it's not really cost effective for the benefit because, you know, public transit isn't all that expensive.
Yeah, and it probably wouldn't be good for public transit since it needs all that fare box revenue.
That's
just
true.
To stay solvent. All right, Matt, I appreciate you talking to us.
Thanks, Steve. Have a good day.
Happy Valentine's Day, and get healthy. Matt Fixey-Verkirk is a reporter for CrossCut.com. He's also worked in the mayor's office in the past. We'll take a moment of a break, and then we come back. What is it about your significant other that has changed you? Without them, there'd be no what? share it with us on Valentine's Day. 206-543-5869, 1-800-289-5869.
10:14 now at KUOW.
Support for KUOW comes from Seattle Cancer Care Alliance's new Proton Therapy Center, a partnership with ProCure Treatment Centers. SCCA's new Proton Therapy Center allows doctors to precisely target cancerous tumors while minimizing effects on surrounding tissue. More at sccaprotontherapy.com.
47 degrees and overcast this morning in Seattle's University District. The forecast calls for cloudy skies. Chance of rain this afternoon. Expect a high of about 52 today. Tonight will be mostly cloudy, some patchy fog after midnight. Look for a low around 43. And tomorrow we'll have some areas of fog in the morning, but things should turn partly sunny. Expect a high of about 54.
This is Ari Shapiro from NPR News. Did you know that renewing members are KUOW's most reliable source of support? If you recently received your renewal notice in the mail, please mail it back today or renew online at KUOW.org. Thanks.
I'm Rob Wood. Good morning. You have more conversation on weekday until 11 o'clock this morning here on 94.9 KUOW.
Good morning. We are here with you, and we are asking you to share some stories with us. We are all individuals, of course. We live in our little lumps of clay, but we also spend a lot of time with someone else, a significant other, a spouse, a partner, a boyfriend, a girlfriend, a child, a parent, a lover. So sometimes this love changes us, right? Teaches us something about ourselves. It's part of what's become the us that is not just they and I and thou. So is there something you discovered about yourself because you have got this partner, this parent, this child, or because it's Valentine's Day, this spouse? Did they foster a new interest, a new involvement? Did they make you a better person in some way because of a change in focus? Well, share it with us, will you, on a Valentine's Day. But what about you was brought about by them, by us? So in honor of Valentine's Day, 206-543-5869, 1-800-289-5869. Share with us some stories, if you would, for the next 10, 15 minutes. 1-800-289-5869. Last Valentine's Day, listeners called in, shared how their loved ones had brought out parts of themselves that they didn't even know existed. Have a listen to some of the highlights from our 2012 Valentine's Day show.
Love at first sight is kind of one of those things, you know, you just can't get out of it. So now we've been together for 27 years. You know, the good times are the peaks, but the valleys are what reinforce the relationship.
He has taught me that love is not what you say and it's not flowers on Valentine's Day, although he always brings me flowers on Valentine's Day. It's what you do in a thousand little ways every day, the little kindnesses.
My wife has made me a much better father. I had no idea how to be a good father, and she has made me, she's moved me from bad to fairly good, and I'm very grateful for that. You know, she taught me how to be patient and find the good in all creatures and the good in all people, and sometimes you have to give people the benefit of the doubt to get there, and so I think that's made me a better person, definitely.
I honestly feel like a better person, and I found value in myself that I didn't even know I had.
The bad with the good, my friends. 206-543-5869, 1-800-289-5869. What is it about you that has changed because of them? Who brings you Valentine's, real or metaphorically, today or every day of the year? Share a story with us, if you would, about your Valentine's. 206-543-5869, 1-800-289-5869. Before I go to Caitlin on the phone, just one other person. Here's what Sean from Bellingham, who also called last year, had to say about his wife's greatest gift that changed his view on life.
My wife always wanted kids, so we had one 19 months ago, and my entire view of the world has changed. I never understood how much my parents loved me until I had a kid, I never understood all kinds of things about how the world works and how to see the world in completely different ways. And, you know, in terms of a gift, that's the biggest gift my wife has given me is my daughter. It's just about life and what's important and seeing her happy. And I see my wife differently, too. It's just, it's richer and more beautiful and more alive.
There's part of the fundamental about without them, there is no us. The us gets bigger, doesn't it? Caitlin's in Seattle. Hello, Caitlin.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm blessed.
Because
I met a man 9 years ago, and I had already been through the ringer. I was over 30. I was sterile, and he's a computer programmer. Can I say his name?
Yes.
His IT, actually. His name's Justin. I call him Kitty. And he is a man of very few words, and we were on a date, and he had asked me very clearly to be his wife, and I accepted, and I had told him that, you know, it was forever, and he agreed, and he said, but I really need your heart, because I don't really think you've invested your heart. And I said, I don't think it's there. I think it's made out of black tar and goop and old bubble gum and glass clippings and Seattle rain. He's like, no, I think I need it. I need you to be really there. So he motioned to open where his heart was and put mine inside. And I was really surprised. Wouldn't talk about it again for many years. He paid for IVF. We bought a house that looked just like the drawing I'd drawn when I was a little tiny girl in an area I wanted to live in that had a room for this baby that we were hoping to have. Paid for IVF. It was successful. And right before my son was born in March, that Valentine's Day prior, so 2010, he sat me on the couch and he said, I have a really special gift for you. And he motioned to open where his heart was and handed me back mine and said, you're going to need this. And I've kept it inside all these years and it's repaired. And I know that you're whole. And I know that you're going to be a good mom. And I know that it's going to grow and expand. And this year, I'm pregnant again and I'm due in 3 more weeks again, and so our children are 3 years apart. And I just want to thank a wonderful man for taking a chance on somebody that was really damaged and giving me a family. So for Valentine's Day, I have a new heart and a family. And that's just unheard of in this day and age. We're going to celebrate our 9th anniversary coming up right after Valentine's Day.
That is an excellent story.
And I just feel really blessed. And I thought, I know that for 30 years, my heart hurt on Valentine's Day. Probably not the first three. My mom was awesome. But, you know, after you realize what Valentine's Day could mean, and you don't feel like that girl or that person, I was over 30. People told me I was done. And you're never done. You just have to have someone work with you to heal your heart.
Caitlin, thanks a lot.
Have a great day.
We have a great day.
Bye.
Bye-bye. A fine story. A fine story. Edie, is it Edie?
Yep.
On Mercer Island?
Yes.
That was a nice story.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Happy Valentine's Day.
To you.
My husband and I have been married for over 21 years. We have 3 sons, 21, 18, and 14. And there's so many things, but when I heard your question this morning, I feel so grateful. My husband has brought the sort of exercise element and ethic into our family, and I have to say I wasn't, that wasn't probably going to be in my life without him, and I've exercised regularly and our children, we do that a lot together as a family, and it's because of him, and our family is so much healthier because of it, not just physically, but it really helps with stress and just bringing us closer together as a family.
How fun.
So I wanted to say happy Valentine's Day to my Valentine, Dave. I love you.
You should say that one more time because I was talking on over you.
Oh, sure. I just wanted to say happy Valentine's Day to my Valentine, Dave. I love you.
See, now he can find that and he can make that his ringtone if he wants.
Thank you.
Thank you, Edie.
Awesome. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you for calling. All right. Is it Heidi in Shoreline? Uh-oh, Heidi, you're going to have to turn your radio down. You'll hear me say that in a moment.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you for calling. All right.
Shoreline?
Uh-oh, Heidi, you're going to have to turn your radio down. You'll hear me say that in a moment.
Thank you.
How'd that work, Heidi? That was like being in outer space, wasn't it? Oh, no, she's not back yet. All right, we'll be done. I sometimes like to be 8 seconds ahead of everybody else. Sarah's on Capitol Hill. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
How is your partner helping you?
I tend to be really high energy and gregarious and sort of in the fray, and sometimes I sort of overreact. And my husband is a calm, logical, linear thinker who takes me back to sort of center. He centers me, I guess, is the best way to do it. And I think we balance each other because I pep him up and he calms me down. And I just love that about him. We are such a good fit. We just celebrated our 20th anniversary, or we're about to celebrate our 21st. And I love him as much as the day I met him. Not met him. The day I married him, let's say that.
But he does just what we were talking about, right? He sort of fills in the parts that you would like filled in, and I imagine you do the same for him.
That's exactly right. To get, you know, sort of the yin and the yang thing.
Yeah. Hey, Sarah, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate that. You know, this is a fine opportunity to send out a Valentine. 206-543-5869. Before there was us, them, there was just you. So how did that transition from you to us change you? What was different? 206-543-5869, 1-800-289-5869. Chris writes, my wife, Maura, is fabulous. I am 52 years old with twin boys who are 3 years old. I'm also a firefighter who works 24-hour shifts. Maura has made it possible for me to keep working at one of the busiest stations in Tacoma because after working hard all day in biotech, she comes home to work hard all night taking care of the three of us. I love her, he writes. So, what about for you? What is the meaning of a Valentine's Day for you? You were once just you. Now there's us. What changed in you? How did you learn something different about yourself? 206-543-5869, 1-800-289-5869. Often when we ask this question, people tell us about, you know, a moment, some moment when they changed, when they realized they were not the same person anymore. But I imagine I don't even have to imagine, I know. It's gradual, right? It's over time that you become this other person. So a few more moments here. Share that moment, that gradual change that you became this other person in your life. Somebody who had more to give, more to offer, more understanding about the world because of what was happening in that relationship. Ginny's in Seattle. Hi, Ginny.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for calling. What changed for you? What was the I that became us?
Well, I have been married. This is my second marriage, and I've been married for it'll be 15 years this year. And in 2002, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, and fought that battle with my husband at my side. He went to every single appointment with me, never missed one. Took all the notes, kept files of all my all of the orders, all of the lab reports, and last year I was diagnosed, the cancer came back, it had metastasized, and he continues to do that, and it's just one of the many things that he does as my rock. He's the rock that holds me together, that I lean on, that you know, makes it possible for me to go on every day. This morning I got a little bit of bad news, and I was going to go to a meeting that I go to, and I said, I don't want to go. And he said, no, you'll be happy. You'll be so happy. He just knows what I need, and he's there for me all the time.
Boy, and, that must be two-way, though, you know. You must give something back.
I hope so. I think I do, but he definitely gives to me, and he's has probably taught me how to give. So, Richard, I love you.
Ginny, thanks a lot. I appreciate you calling, and good luck. We're with you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Michael's in Redmond. Michael, I guess you get I get one last call with you. Michael, what do you learn from your wife?
Well, Steve, We've been married for a little over 28 years, which is amazing to me. And, you know, when Jane and I were first together for many years, she used to fight with me. I had a lot of defenses, and she fought with my defenses. And then after a while, she started to ignore my defenses and just deal with me. And, you know, in just the past year, I am seeing, it's like I'm dealing with me. And even in these last days, it's sort of more and more, I feel as though I'm dealing with myself. And I feel as though she's given me myself. And so, happy Valentine's Day, Jane.
I love that image, ignoring your defenses and dealing with you yourself. You didn't even know that yourself was there, huh? In some ways.
Not really, no. It was quite hazy.
Michael, I appreciate it. I appreciate sharing it with us.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you. So, some thoughts about the positive aspect of Valentine's Day and the love that we get from one another. Oh, you could tell Katie Sewell had fun with that. Yes, now we're going to do a 180. Because, you know, last year we did these two separate parts of the show, and I sort of insisted that we needed to have this aspect of Valentine's Day too. Not out of acrimony, not out of dissension, not out of a darkness, but just because, you know, there is also that aspect of love too. So when did you know it was over? When did you know on this Valentine's Day, think back, and when you knew it was over? So I appreciate your stories of love and faithfulness. And now also your stories of when you knew it was over. 206-543-5869, 1-800-289-5869. I just thought that breaking glass was very funny. Here's what Jeff wrote. She forbade my travels to Madagascar and threatened breakup if I continued to go there. Wow, he went more than once. I went anyway, and she said, if you love me, you will never call me again. A year later, I called. She said, I thought I told you. I said, I know. That was Jeff from Tacoma. That was what happened to him. So what about you? What is the breakup that you still remember when you knew it was over? When you knew, my gosh, I think this relationship is not quite going in the direction I thought it was going to go. 206-543-5869, 1-800-289-5869. Susanna writes, I knew it was over the day Mikhail died in my arms of a heart attack 35 years after we met. This is a transition story, isn't it? I knew it was over, but I didn't want to believe it. Sometimes I don't. I love my husband, lives on in a non-local realm I don't understand. And even though I'm not part of a couple anymore, I still love Valentine's Day, although I will walk and eat and sleep alone today, missing my lover, hoping someday I might have another special person in my life, knowing maybe that I won't. All right, well, in 180s, we take 180s. So there's one way. Susanna knew it was over. Well, Judith must know it was over. Valentine's Day, what a bunch of hype. Makes millions of people reflect on being alone and feel let down. Ouch. I celebrate anti-Valentine Day at my apartment with a sign on the door for all single people to come in and celebrate anti-Valentine's Day with a few good glasses of champagne. And I add, and who knows where that leads. Linda writes, back in 1991, after 25 years of marriage and two children, my then husband met a woman 25 years my junior, decided he didn't want anything to do with raising a family anymore. So he disappeared, and we haven't seen him since. My wonderful daughter is now an amazing 23-year-old woman. My 33-year-old son is still grieving the loss. So when it's over, it's not funny. We know that. Megan's in Bellingham. Hello, Megan.
Hi there.
How are you?
Hi. Can you hear me? I'm on a cell phone.
Oh, it's an excellent connection.
Okay. Well, I knew it was over. I met a man 16 years younger than me. He was 25. I was 40. And I recaptured my youth with him. I ended up getting pregnant. We were together 6 years, going on 7. And I knew it was over when I went to visit him at his apartment. And I heard a girl's voice, and I knocked, and he wouldn't open the door.
Ouch.
I knew it was completely over because he had tried to stray 8 different times. Yeah. And, of course, I was devastated. We had a marriage date set, finally, for the day that we had met, May 13, 7 years earlier. And if I could add, our sex life was good and everything, so he really had me fooled. And he met her on Chatline, and he's in Colorado, and he has 2 little babies. But on a happy note, what he did give me is a daughter I never thought I would have, because I had a son at that time. He's 17 now, and my daughter is 8. She'll be 9 on March 3rd. Her name's Shaylin.
Well, all right. We'll take that. We'll take that as something happy about it. I appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you, Megan. We're getting your calls about when you knew it was over. And yes, it was an abrupt 180, wasn't it? Janet's in Seattle. Hi, Janet. What happened? When did you know?
Well, I had asked him for 15 minutes at night so that we could just be laying down and talking, because I couldn't get him to do stuff like that. And so one night he's looking at me, and he looks so sweet. And, you know, I think he's thinking, oh, I really love her. And I said, you know, fishing, I said, so what are you thinking about? And he said, harbor seals. He was a journalist with fisheries.
Oh, they're terrible people.
Isn't that precious?
Yes. So that's it. Was that it?
Well, I suppose there were other things, but that was a pretty that was a fun moment.
Harbor seals.
Fun in retrospect.
Oh, I guess.
Devastating at the moment.
I bet. Harbor seals, Janet. Janet, thanks a lot. I'm glad you could laugh. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Here's what Stephen writes. He says, I knew it was over when her ex ambushed and mugged me in front of her house. The cop who investigated and went to her door came back and told me, she said, you're not in a relationship. Duh. Yeah, I guess that would be a problem. That would be bad. Aaron writes, I knew it was over when I discovered my ex had been cheating on me. Things had been deteriorated, but when I found out he was cheating, I confronted him. We had a long conversation and ended with me asking, how do you even get these girls to go out with you? What is it that you do to con them into it? So he decided to show me by taking me out on one of his dates, and I agreed out of sheer curiosity. In the first 10 minutes, I knew it was over when he handed me a single rose. In the almost 2 years we were together, he had never given me flowers, and it took him taking me on a date that he takes all the women he has cheated with on me to get him to give me a flower. So I dumped him the next day after recovering from the shock and wallowing in my own stupidity. By the way, she goes on, my new boyfriend is amazing. Upgrade does not even begin to describe the difference between my ex and my current love. Sounds cliche, but he makes me want to be a better person. Aaron in Bothell, when did you know it was over?
Dating a guy, and I thought everything was pretty great, and so we had a date, so I go to his apartment, and it's dark, and I knock on the door, no answer, so I looked in the window, and he's moved out. There's no furniture in the apartment.
That's like, it? He's gone?
Yeah, he's gone. I mean, that kind of took the hint there that I guess we weren't going to be having a date that night.
Hey, is that it? Do you ever see him again?
No. As a matter of fact, I did not see him again. I guess he went to Alaska.
Yeah, well, I guess that's where you'd go.
I mean, really, honestly, he didn't need to go to Alaska. out of state or anything to let me know. He could have just said, but apparently that's what he did.
Wow. All right, Aaron. I appreciate that.
All right. Bye.
Thanks for the story. How about you? When did you know it was over? Here's what Marilyn says. You know it's over when the person who broke your heart reappears on your doorstep 20 years later, and you just feel annoyed and wish they would go away. 20 years, though. Susan writes, I knew it was over. I was a young married of 21. It was clear that the six-month marriage was in trouble. We both decided that one day we would decide what each of us could do to improve our relationship. I decided that I would stop complaining about things, thinking this would really help. When he came back from work that day, I said he should go first. He said, I got it. We should rob a bank. I've got a gun and you can drive the car. And he was not kidding. All right. That's when you know it's over. We leave it there. Thank you for sharing both sides of Valentine's Day. And, you know, you see where they come together, don't you? This is Weekday.
.94.9 KUOW, it's 10:40. For Valentine's Day, we'll hear more intriguing listener love stories on The Takeaway this afternoon in the 1 o'clock hour.
The president's hour-long State of the Union address and his dozens of policy proposals, not to mention the substance of the Republican response, was completely overshadowed by the simple act of a thirsty man taking a drink. Although Senator Rubio would probably have been wise not to then do a spit take shouting, "Raise the minimum, what?" I'm Peter Sagal. We'll be well lubricated. And this week's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Saturday morning at 10 o'clock here on 94.9 KUOW.
Support for KUOW comes from the UW World Series, presenting New Zealand dance company Black Grace, performing contemporary dance fused with Pacific Islander rituals, traditions, and martial arts, from February 21st to 23rd at Meany Hall. Tickets at uwworldseries.org.
46 degrees and overcast in Seattle's University District this morning. We're expecting a chance of rain this afternoon, a high of 52 degrees. Mostly cloudy tonight, some patchy fog after midnight. We'll see a low of about 43. I'm Rob Wood. Will the GOP tack to the middle and try to help governor be dominated by hardliners? Warren Olney talks about that on To the Point ahead in the 11 o'clock hour.
Quiet, please. In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
This is Jack Benny talking. Jordan, Rocky Jordan.
Have you ever danced with a murderer?
This is Orson Welles speaking from London.
King County.
Once again, we delve into the golden age of radio. Katie Sewell and I. You know, can I read you one more email from that segment?
Please do.
Elizabeth writes, after 22 years of marriage, during a cross-country move with three kids, three dogs, and a cat, he told me he had met someone new in the city where we were moving.
Oh. That's just cruel.
People can be very brutal.
Yeah.
And probably unknowingly, unthinkingly so.
Well, I hope she's moved on to better pastures.
I do too. You know where that, you know, that kind of story would have arisen?
In a soap opera.
On a soap opera. That would have been you would not have believed it in a soap opera. And that's why we were thinking for Valentine's Day and for following that conversation we had with you folks about when you knew it was over. Without them, there was no...
This?
We thought we'd take a look at the origins of the soaps on the broadcast medium. So, okay, television soap operas, they're being canceled right now. Less women seem to be at home, right?
It's part of the reason.
They're working. And also more viewing options. I mean, you can watch a soap opera, you can watch somebody teach how to cook something really nice.
Yeah.
All right, so where did these things come from?
Well, of course, they grew out of radio. And their main legacy at the time, Steve, is that they sold a lot of soap.
Help me, what's wrong with my face, Miss Sally? Those red blotches just won't go away.
Soap, probably. What kind are you using? Some beauty soap, I suppose.
Yes, Miss Sally.
Many highly perfumed, prettily colored soaps contain fatty acids and free alkali that really irritate and harm your skin.
But, Miss Sally...
My doctor recommended Ivory. A soap should cleanse gently. And that to do that, a soap must be pure.
And, Miss Sally,
do you think Henry would...
Oh, quick, my gloves, Hilda. Is the bell for the second act?
No, Hilda will never get a Grecian nose by using a beauty soap. But we do hope she gets Henry.
I do hope she gets Henry. Miss Sally is so helpful.
Oh, it's the same ad we're hearing today, isn't it? Soap was the main product advertised during the soaps, which is why, of course, they're known as soap operas. But all manner of household products were advertised.
Use Ajax, the foaming cleanser. Clean pots and pans, just like a whiz.
Ajax cuts grease faster than any other leading cleanser.
may I say that that voice should come back to radio?
Whatever cleanser. Well, the fact of the matter was, whatever product you advertised on a soap opera, it sold. In a survey that they took, they found that 61% of women said that they regularly bought the product that was advertised on their favorite soap opera.
Wow.
So that was huge marketing power. So it's really no surprise that we went from having three soap operas in 1931 to having 61 different serials by 1939. Had to get on that train. Most soap episodes were only 15 minutes long, so they didn't take that long to write. And they were also incredibly cheap to make. In the book I read, they said it cost about $18,000 a week to make it.
For everybody.
For everybody. Actors, writers, sound men. You've calculated that out to be what?
$936,000 a year if they do 52 weeks.
And on average, each one of those soap operas brought in $35 million from product sales and from, you know, sponsorships. So huge, huge business.
So where the wealth came to broadcasting, huh? Started right there.
Well, it kept the daytimes alive, for sure. WGN AM in Chicago had the very first soap opera. It was a show called Clara, Lou, and M.
Oh, I'd love to hear that.
Which started as a sketch that was performed for fun by three sorority sisters until Colgate found out and picked it up.
Oh, Lou, I bet I know who that is.
Tell him we're going to have corn fritters for breakfast Wednesday.
Oh, don't tell her.
Well,
yeah, but listen, they want me to tell you.
Lou,
No,
Lou.
Well, what?
Listen, tell him we're going to have eggs a la goldenrod and corn fritters.
Well,
yeah.
Elmer, Claire wants me to tell you what we're going to have for our wedding breakfast Wednesday. You know.
Oh, good. He don't want to know. I wanted him to be surprised.
Katie, I'm stabbing myself in my eyes, in my ears.
Well, as you can hear also from that clip, that not much ever really happened in the soap opera.
Oh, that was
an entire
horrible
little sketch about what they were going to have for breakfast.
Corn fritters.
Yeah, corn fritters. Now, at least you captured that detail. They spent enough time on it. Soap opera writers had a really hard job. Their job was to slice the plot of these shows so thin that the objective was that you could vacation for a month and still know what was happening when you turned back in.
And it worked, even though that sounds so tedious.
In these soap operas, it could take a character an entire week just to send her husband off for work. You'd have the waking him up scene, the giving him breakfast scene, the scene where she ponders her feelings about him, of course. And the trick to writing a soap opera was to have nothing happen the entire episode but end on a cliffhanger. And I had to find an example of this. Here's the end of an episode called The Romance of Helen Trent. It was about a 35-year-old woman who always carries a torch for a man named Gil Whitney.
Be still, I'm talking, Helen.
If that's Gil Whitney, I've got to speak to
him. Right, I said, you can speak when I get through.
What's happening there anyhow? I want to speak to Helen.
Of course, Gil, darling, I'll put her right on. As a matter of fact, you see, Helen Trent has just killed her former admirer.
What?
I'll let you speak
let
to her.
Let me have that phone, dear.
Is that you, Helen? For heaven's sake, what's happening?
It's Rex. He's dead, Gil. He's been murdered.
You won't want to miss the next dramatic chapter in The Romance of Helen Trent.
I do not.
What's going to happen? You know, in some ways, this is really true today. I was thinking about it because sometimes when I'm homesick, I'll watch Days of Our Lives. And I haven't watched Days of Our Lives since I was a middle school student. And I still can follow what's going on for the most part.
They don't have the same characters on there,
do they?
Same
characters.
Those people.
Same characters.
Those people are really torn.
So this is a really hard job for the writer, but at least there were common themes that all of these 61 different radio soap operas revolved around. They all had four prominent messages, and I thought it would be fun to tell you the messages and then give you a little example. So number one, the main message is all women want to marry, no matter what it takes to make it happen.
Say, Granville has caught Gil in a trap.
And now Faye is claiming that Gil proposed to her, and she's threatening Gil with scandal.
Scandal, baby.
That's right. Number two is all women are very concerned about their husbands.
Darling, do you want me to help you get up?
I'll get up by myself.
Well, you don't have to snap at me like that.
Oh, man.
Number three, all women are suspicious of other women.
I'm taking the plane to Mexico City to give Gil his divorce so that Faye can marry him at once. And you swore you'd never set Gil Whitney free. Not while there was a chance of his marrying Helen Trent.
Oh, Helen's still trying to get married to Gil.
Of course. That's her, what her entire show is about. And above all else, love is to be pursued at all costs.
Do you really want to try to forget the past few months? Countless irritations that have made us seem not to hate each other, but just not to care anymore.
Oh, Mary, I do. I do more than anything else in the world.
So there you are.
Boy, I do too, Katie.
I should mention that in that category of women are suspicious of other women, that they were especially skeptical of them if they wanted to work outside the house.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That Why would you want to do that?
That was the theme, wasn't it?
Yeah. Part of that was intentional because they didn't want these women working outside the house.
Get
they need
those
them
ladies
home and buying soap.
Buying soap, and we want the soldiers have to be getting the jobs. Yeah.
So by the late 1950s, the shows start being canceled with the advent of television. The few that could succeed on television moved. Perhaps you recognize this show.
The New Does brings you The Guiding Light. Created by Erna Phillips.
So The Guiding Light made it big on television. It's credited by the Guinness Book of World Records as being the longest-running soap opera. It lasted for 72 years in its run on radio and television until it was canceled in 2009. So that was the end of an era. And
by the way,
Guiding Light era.
Same actors in the same romances that were unfulfilled for 72 years?
Yeah, most likely. And when this is the sad thing. When the shows were canceled on the radio, it happened really fast. And so fast, in fact, that sometimes the plots weren't even tied up. So if you can imagine listening to a show that unfolds every day for 20 years, and then it ends like this.
The turning world which turns as it did in the beginning, and the promise that we find in our children. Maybe that's the life eternal.
Anything I can do, Grandma?
You've done so much, child. Just let me look at your pretty face. You've done so much.
I would be a little dissatisfied with that ending.
So, yeah, imagine a whole bunch of storylines that have been going on for 27 years, and that's what you get at the very end.
You just leave Jack, that's like leaving Jack Bauer in the middle of a mission.
Yeah, that's right. That was the end of a show called Ma Perkins. Like I said, it ran for 27 years. The actress that played Ma Perkins all those years was named Virginia Payne, and she was interviewed by the paper about the cancellation of the show, and she sadly was quoted as saying that the show was one of the last bits of Americana left. Very pity. But staying true to the marriage ambition that was the most important thing hyped in all of these soap operas, the newspaper that wrote that article ended the article by saying, playing a role of Ma Perkins is as close to that station Virginia Payne ever got in her life. She never married.
Ow. That's it?
She that never was the married? Article. Yeah.
Well, you know, I have to say, I know a lot of folks love the soaps. I respect you all. Never watched one. I know it's not really for me.
Maybe you just haven't dedicated enough time to it yet.
Well, you know, what am I watching? I'm watching some, you know, show where people are shooting people, and that's sort of the same thing.
Well, I now have 61 different radio shows, soap operas that I can recommend to you if you want to delve in.
Yeah, well, I'll listen to one now and then one 20 years from now. That'll be enough. Thanks, Katie.
You're welcome.
Put new does in your washing machine. Finest does you've ever seen. Bigger news now when you sing. D-U-Z does everything.
Sarah Dickerman writes for Slate, the New York Times, other publications. She blogs at sarahdickerman.com. And on a Thursday, she offers us a restaurant recommendation, a place to go for lunch. Hello, Sarah.
Hi there.
By the way, Sarah, you're home working, right?
Yeah, I work from home.
So you sneak over and watch a soap opera?
I have not watched soap operas since high school, but I did watch them then. The one that Anne Heche was in. I can't remember the name of that one.
Do you know which one Anne Heche was in? I don't know. I don't know that one. Well, somebody will know.
There were twins.
Anne Heche was a twin?
There were twins, yeah. She was a twin.
Wow.
And I'd do my AP homework while watching soaps. Imagine that. I can't imagine doing something like that now.
That's pretty good. You're able to get the AP homework done. All right, where are we going for lunch?
Okay, I have to get in the car to go to this place. Some of you don't. I'm going down to downtown Renton, which is as I discovered, has many antique shops and also a really good Indian restaurant called Naan N Curry.
Naan N Curry. What makes them good? N-A-A-N-N Curry. And I think it's got...
Yeah. So they put the naan right up there, and I have to say the naan is quite delicious, and you can see the guy patting out the naan, which is this, you know, this Indian flatbread that gets quite bubbly because it's cooked in a hot tandoor oven. And so that they do this great little, for lunch it's nice because they do a great little lunch special, and you get some of that delicious naan, some rice, and a curry of choice, and as I think I said to you, a totally indifferent salad, but the rest of it is delicious. And I had a delicious chana masala, which is one of my always the go-to favorites, with chickpeas. They have really good eggplant bagan bharta, which is sort of a spicy ginger eggplant, and lam palak gosht, which was sort of a lamb with greens. So all delicious curries. But then the thing that really knocked my socks off was something called the chapal kebab, which was a lamb patty that's quite spicy with chilies and served with a delicious green chutney that had some mint in it, and it also had these sort of crunchy, slightly sour things in it, and it turned out they were dried pomegranate seeds, anar dana.
Nice.
So delicious. So
what was that called again?
Go get the lunch special, but don't skip those little, get an order of chapal kebab for the table.
Chapal kebab. That sounds very nice. And I see they also have the sort of the traditional things I've come to expect from northern Indian restaurants, chicken vindaloo, chicken tikka masala, all well done, all tasty. Oh yeah, I know you haven't had them all, I'm sure.
I need to go back. Clearly, one of the things I saw they have Pakistani dishes as well, and a terrific Pakistani dish is called haleem, which is a lentil and meat stew that's very long cooked and has I can't tell you how many ingredients in it usually. So I'll go back and try the haleem next time I'm there.
I like this this on their website, Naan N Curry's website. Chef Iram Naveed comes from the famous Usmani restaurant, which has locations all over Pakistan. I mean, you just kind of get my head wrapped around that there's a chain in Pakistan that's called Usmania, I should say.
Yeah.
I guess it's Usmani or Usmania. That's great.
Well, someone's trained him well. It's a good place to go, and it was fun for me to see a part of the city part of the Sound area that I don't get too often. So it's nice to be in Renton.
If Burien's the new Brooklyn, that makes Renton the new Queens. Yeah, very good. Renton's the new Queens. I think we should start that campaign right now. What is this blog you're recommending? Lunch, thecanalhouse.com.
Yeah, it's called Canal House Cooks Lunch, and I guess, you know, there's something nice about being able to try a little before you buy in the cookbook world, because cookbooks are expensive. So it's a lovely, there are cookbooks available from the Canal House group, which is a partnership between two former Sever editors who went off and did this sort of amazing independent project that's now become quite a cult hit. But they have a blog called The Canal House Cooks Lunch, and they show you these beautiful images of everything they've been eating for each day, and they're just, they're not quite recipes, they're more like ideas for things to do, and sometimes it's quite simple, and they're just, they've got some avocado and watercress and some homemade mayonnaise on a slice of bread, and sometimes it's a more elaborate soup that you see that they put together, or a beautiful salad that has, say, green beans and hard-cooked eggs and a little avocado and some potatoes and watercress. You'll see the same ingredients cycling through. So one thing I like about it is it's a little bit realistic about the way we actually cook. You know, once you've gotten watercress for a week, you probably have more than one watercress salad. So I sort of like that honesty that they convey in their images, and they're beautifully shot because, of course, these people have been making beautiful images for Sever long before they started the Canal House. And then if you like it, you can either order, they have one big cookbook, but they also do these wonderful, very slim cookbook volumes that are seasonal. and they come out almost by, they come out like a, you can do it as a subscription. And so that's really fun.
All right. We will put links to that blog and the restaurant Naan and Curry on our Facebook page, on our website. Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks so much for having me.
Sarah Dickerman writes for Slate. She's blogging at sarahdickerman.com. Weekdays produced by Katie Sewell, Jason Magano, Andy Hurst, Amina Al-Sadi, Danielle Anthony Goodwin, our intern, and Rob Wood, the engineer. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Warren Olney has To the Point coming up next. This is KUOW FM Seattle, KUOW Tumwater, KQOW Bellingham, and Digital HD Services. We're online at KUOW.org.
Support for KUOW comes from Chaplin's Bellevue Subaru, committed to safety. Subaru Engineering features stability control and braking, crash protection systems, and child safety. Chaplin's Bellevue Subaru at I-90 and Eastgate, or chaplinssubaru.com.
We have...
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.